This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Hear all four parts of our investigative series, Landlord v. Tenant. Hear the struggles faced by tenants and challenges encountered by landlords and discover whether landlords are being held accountable. You'll also go on a rental inspection and hear from Bloomington Community Development Director Tom Daybreiner.
We are looking not to fine people. You know, we want the results. We want the outcomes. Sometimes that takes a little bit of time.
Find out if Bloomington and Normal inspectors are doing enough to crack down on landlords who are chronic violators and meet a mother who is trying to find adequate housing. It's all four parts of Landlord v. Tenant and an interview with McLean County Associate Judge David Butler, who handles landlord-tenant disputes. All of that plus a GLT News update on the way. It's October 20th, 2017. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from listener contributions to GLT, with additional support from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is a special edition of Sound Ideas, bringing you all of the episodes of our Landlord v. Tenant investigative series. I'm Mike McCurdy. An aging stock of low-income housing in Bloomington Normal is causing ongoing tension between tenants and landlords. Twin City landlords are cited more than 3,000 times a year for housing code violations. Because of their age, many of those rental units are in a chronic state of disrepair. Compounding the problem is that Bloomington and Normal each have only two housing inspectors to oversee more than 20,000 rental units, and there's very little pressure on landlords to change. A 2015 League of Women Voters study found a more than 300% increase in the number of people seeking subsidized housing in the last 15 years. GLT's Judy Valente chronicles the odyssey of one mother trying to find affordable housing for her family.
On the day Candace Gales moved into her apartment at 610 South Linden in Normal, she says she sat down on her front step and wept.
All you could do was cry. It's like, I can't bring my kids into this place. You know, there was blood splatters on the wall. The stove was years of grease just caked on. I had to take a gum scraper, I don't know what those, the painters usually use it, and scrape the grease like off of the stove. There was dust everywhere. You literally needed a hazmat suit to come in here.
Gail says she called her landlord, who had assured her the apartment would be cleaned by the time she and her four children moved in.
When I called the landlord and told him, I said, you know, I thought the cleaners were going to come in and clean and get everything ready for me. It's like, well, you know, I thought I was doing you a favor by letting you move in. You know, you explained you needed a place to stay, and this is the thanks that I get. And I'm like, I wouldn't let a stray dog live in these conditions, be in this apartment like this.
Gales's landlord, Bernard Dotson, declined repeated requests for an interview. He owns several low-income housing units. He's one of about 200 landlords countywide who participate in the federal Section 8 housing program. That program guarantees landlords payment of a portion of the rent they charge their tenants.
When we did move in, we got ate up by spiders. He ended up calling the pesticide people out. I mean, it was just disgusting.
Gales' story is familiar among tenants who must compete for a shrinking number of affordable units. A GLT review of Bloomington and Normal rental housing inspection reports shows many landlords who rent to low-income tenants keep properties in constant disrepair. Greg Trummel, Normal's chief housing inspector, says multi-unit rental properties must be inspected at least once a year. But with two inspectors to monitor nearly 9,000 units, it's a struggle.
There's a fairly in-depth list of things that we're looking for, but at the same time, it's probably a 5 or 6 minute inspection inside and outside the building. We're not operating every window, swinging every door. It's pretty much a visual inspection, and if, you know, we see obvious things.
Inspection reports obtained by GLT Radio through the Freedom of Information Act show Dotson was cited for numerous violations in the last 3 years, including leaking plumbing fixtures, inoperable smoke alarms, and missing windows in his units. Gales's monthly rent is $750, and she pays her own utilities.
Why do I deserve to be treated like this? Because I'm low income, because I have Section 8? Is that, you know, what it is? I like a clean house. I like pictures on the walls. This is already not to my standards, but I needed a place to stay.
Gales had difficulty with her previous landlord as well. She says her previous landlord refused to return the $995 security deposit. She was working at a part-time marketing position at the time, and the security deposit was money she was counting on to help her find a new home in Tennessee, where she planned to move after being offered a full-time job there. Emily Petrie, an attorney for Prairie State Legal Services, said she contacted Gales's landlord, Andrew Hollins, seeking to resolve the dispute over the deposit.
They were just really angry that she had moved out because they said she didn't properly give notice. And then asking for the rest and damages that really she didn't do. There were a few, you know, normal wear and tear things.
The landlord also reported Gales to the housing authority, claiming she owed him money. A complaint like that from a landlord could cause the tenant to lose eligibility for Section 8 help. Petrie says the landlord agreed to rescind his complaint if Gales agreed to give up any claim to the security deposit.
And our client wanted to accept that because she was ready to move on.
Hollins, the landlord, refused to speak on tape to GLT News. He said in a brief telephone interview he considered the matter resolved. The effect on Gales' life was significant. She did not move to Tennessee. She lost the job offer at a plasma company there. She and her children bounced around from place to place.
Without that security deposit, I was unable to move, so I end up living with my sister, who also has four kids of her own. So it's me, my four kids, my sister and her four kids, all in this one three-bedroom apartment that she has.
When Gales found her current two-bedroom apartment at 610 South Linden, she says she felt she had to take it. Her life reflects the hard-scrabble existence of many women. She became pregnant in her senior year in high school, then married her child's father. They had three more children. She says her former husband physically abused her and eventually went to jail. Gales obtained her GED and completed an associate's degree in psychology, which she followed by earning a second associate's degree in business.
And from then on, it was just like all about progress, giving my kids a healthy life from what they were used to seeing, being in that domestic situation.
Gales now works part-time as a cashier at a supermarket. The apartment she rents is part of a multi-unit building. Approaching her doorway, the first thing you notice is a missing storm door window. Inside, Gales points out ill-fitting plexiglass windows. To keep out the hot air this summer, she says she's had to constantly run her air conditioning.
My bill was $547 that I had to pay. I've been running my electricity like crazy to keep it cool, at least cool in the house, by the windows not being properly insulated and the doors not being properly insulated. I can't keep up.
Gail says she had to choose between paying the electric company and keeping current on her rent, which she is required to do to remain eligible for Section 8. When she didn't pay the utility bill, the power company turned off her electricity. Nor are those the only problems at her apartment. The tub leaks. The lights don't work along a stairway that leads to a below-ground bedroom. The water heater next to the bedroom flooded, leaving a visible watermark on the wall. A Town of Normal inspector earlier this year cited the water heater problem.
Our inspection revealed probably four or five what I would call fairly ordinary or routine code violations that needed to be addressed.
Trummel, Normal's chief of inspections, says the landlord addressed the flooding by fixing a valve in the water heater. But other issues Gales cited did not appear on that April inspection report, including a safety concern. The screen in the sole window of the basement bedroom where her son sleeps was screwed shut.
So if there was ever in a fire, he wouldn't be able to get out unless he had a drill sitting right there by the window to take the thing out.
Gales says she complained to her landlord, and she says she also called an inspector at the Bloomington Housing Authority. The Housing Authority oversees Section 8 units in both Bloomington and Normal. Kim Holman Short is Executive Director of the Housing Authority. She says her agency inspected Gales' unit last November and identified the bathtub leak. She says the landlord caulked the area around the tub, but inspectors were not aware of the other issues Gales cited.
If we see where the landlord is unable or unwilling to bring that unit up to standard, we will terminate that contract with the landlord and give the resident the opportunity to find another unit that meets the housing standards.
Informed of Gail's concerns by GLT Radio, Trummel of the town of Normal visited the property along with the landlord.
So at that time, I did, you know, walk through the unit with her and essentially asked her to identify what she felt were shortcomings.
He found problems that the inspection last spring had apparently missed, including the windows.
You know, I did observe these basement windows. The screens themselves were screwed in to the window jamb. The window itself was operable. Those were addressed, and the screws had been removed. So, you know, from our perspective, the window situation has been addressed.
Trummel says he directed the landlord to replace a circuit that had shorted, rendering the lighting fixtures inoperable in two bedrooms and a hallway.
So then he did engage a licensed electrical contractor to come out, and repairs have been made on that as well.
And Trummel says the landlord will be required to replace ill-fitting plexiglass windows with new ones. And he has to get a professional plumber to deal with the leak.
Time is provided for a property owner or manager to address these concerns, and then reinspections occur. And there's no question, there's been some lag in getting some of these issues resolved.
But Gales wonders why pleas to her landlord went unheeded in the first place.
I feel like we get taken advantage of a lot of the times being low income. You don't have a voice, you know, and it hurts. It hurts bad because... yes, I'm low income, you know, I'm a struggling mother, but I go out every day, I work, I don't sit at home and rely on the government. I went back to school, I have a degree, and it just doesn't seem like it's doing anything for me.
Petrie of Prairie Legal Services says tenants sometimes move out rather than confront their landlord through the government bureaucracy or in court. And many times, tenants like Gales choose to endure hardship conditions.
Quite frankly, they have no other money, no other resources. They've given the landlord whatever money that they did have to start paying for rent, and there's just no other option.
The current shortage of new rental housing and quality affordable housing gives landlords a distinct advantage. It's a situation Holman Short of the Bloomington Housing Authority says isn't likely to change anytime soon.
Our community is growing, and the number of affordable housing is not keeping up with that growth. So, yes, we can certainly assist more families, more households, but the funding is just not there to support that.
Still, she says, protecting tenants' rights remains a high priority.
I would certainly say to any participant on our program that you should not minimize your value, and you should expect the same treatment regardless of your income and whether or not you are a participant of a voucher program.
But many tenants, like Candace Gales, say it is nearly impossible for those who don't walk in their shoes to identify with the fear and struggle they experience daily. I'm Judy Valente.
And I'm Mike McCurdy. Coming up Monday during Sound Ideas, the conversation about affordable housing continues. GLT's Judy Valente talks with officials from the McLean County Regional Planning Commission and the Bloomington Housing Authority, as well as a community activist, about possible solutions to the affordable housing crisis. That's Monday during Sound Ideas. And our series Landlord v. Tenant continues today. A complaint made to the City of Bloomington or Town of Normal about rental housing conditions is no guarantee of a fast fix. Find out what happens when two Bloomington tenants face a health hazard and the landlord takes nearly 2 weeks to get it fixed. That's in part two of the GLT series, Landlord v. Tenant. Judy Valente also reports on what city inspectors can and cannot do to help.
On the morning of July 1st, Brad May and his roommate awaken to a situation no one relishes, a stopped-up toilet. The problem soon grows worse. Raw sewage starts oozing up through the toilet, tub, and bathroom sink in his apartment in Bloomington's Lakewood Terrace complex.
That toilet wasn't cooperating, just kept filling with water and overflowing until we had to shut the water off. You know, that just got worse, and we called the landlord within a half hour, and they explained to us because of the holiday weekend that it would be a couple days before they would be able to be out.
2 days later, the complex's property manager, RCS Property Management, sends a local plumber to estimate the cost for repair. The plumber staunches the flow of sewage and says says he will return in 2 days to complete the work.
That came and went. They didn't call us or show up.
At this point, May says he began repeatedly calling the RCS management office.
At this point, we were calling daily and not so understanding anymore. Didn't really make a difference. We started talking to them about rent reimbursement of some sort to make up for half of our apartment being unusable and, you know, a pretty unsanitary situation. You know, every time we called, you know, the property manager was in court or otherwise occupied, and there was a whole slew of excuses.
13 days pass. On July 14th, a new set of plumbers finally arrives to fix the source of the problem, a cracked drain pipe. To get at the pipe, workers have to break through concrete flooring as well as a wall between the kitchen and bathroom. They also pull up tile in the bathroom, remove the toilet, and disconnect and move the stove and refrigerator.
So it was 2 weeks without water. We haven't been able to cook. We've been spending a huge amount of money on eating out just because, you know, there's nothing else we can do. It's just been quite a headache, you know, plus we've got, you know, food spoiling here. We have a cat locked in a small bedroom that, you know, that's not very fair to the cat.
May and his roommate, Brittany Hart, are left to disinfect the areas that had been covered with sewage. Cockroaches and drain flies begin showing up in the apartment.
Me and my girlfriend on the 14th actually spent together probably 3 hours or so killing these drain flies that were spawning in the sewage and flying around the apartment by the hundreds. And by the hundreds is not an exaggeration. It was, I mean, yeah, we have a trash can full of paper towels from killing them.
I commiserated with him in his frustration.
That's Kyle McShane, the RCS management employee who oversees the Lakewood Terrace complex where May and Hart live.
One of the things that I said to him from the get-go was, I want your apartment fixed as much as you do. I don't want you living in any kind of conditions that you find unsanitary.
McShane blames the delay in getting the work completed on the initial plumbing company he called.
It's frustrating to me as well when I would like to get work done, and I have to continuously try and call different companies to try and just even start repairs in the first place.
McShane says he then worked as fast as he could to get approval from RCS's Chicago office for the second plumber's bid. May and Hart say it wasn't fast enough.
It developed a twitch in my eye because of the stress. I actually went to the doctor for it, and that's what they're telling me the cause probably is. I didn't know if I was having a heart attack or something or what.
We certainly got extremely ill about a week after this whole ordeal started. Just like the amount of stress, it's been really hard on us, you know. I've been just mentally drained.
As their ordeal dragged on, May and Hart say they spoke with the City of Bloomington's Housing Inspections Office.
I did speak with the tenant. He told me that, you know, the condition of that apartment.
Carrie Sneddon is Bloomington's manager for code enforcement.
We did not verify, you know, that particular situation because the sewage problem had been corrected by the time that we got there.
Sneddon's office is responsible for responding to tenants' complaints and inspecting Bloomington's more than 10,000 rental units. Is there some sort of a compliance issue then with that landlord? Is that landlord going to be cited for any type of violation?
Not at this point, because they did get the situation corrected. I mean, and we were brought in the final day. Unfortunately, you know, we had to take it at that point in time. There was not a situation where we could go back on somebody and he said, she said kind of thing.
But 13 days had passed.
In my opinion, yes, that is way too long. I mean, there's a lot of health concerns when you're dealing with sewage that's not properly capped or taken care of, you know, that kind of thing. You know, 13 days is definitely a long time frame, in my opinion.
May and Hart's case underscores the kinds of difficulties tenants can face. The city says there was little it could do for them because they did not contact inspectors as soon as the sewage problem arose. The case also shows how a dispute can quickly escalate. Before the sewage leak was fixed, an RCS maintenance employee engaged in a war of words with May on social media. The maintenance worker wrote to May on Facebook, quote, "What kind of bull are you pulling? This is not a one-hour job. It takes days. So to blow smoke up people's you-know-whats, saying nothing is happening, is very childish and disrespectful on your part." McShane, the property manager, says his employee was merely expressing frustration. By the time the Facebook exchange took place, he says RCS had offered to let May stay in another unit until the repairs could be completed.
So he had access to the apartment that was right next door to his for showers, for toilets, or anything along the lines of that.
May says he was shocked when he went to use the apartment that was offered.
It's filthy. It's infested with cockroaches. There's oil stains on what appears to be oil stains on the walls and the doors and the cabinets.
The day this GLT reporter visited the apartment, dead roaches littered the kitchen floor. A layer of mold covered the bathroom sink. McShane says May should have contacted him if he was dissatisfied.
If he would have let me know that there were any kind of adverse conditions in the apartment that he's staying in, I would have had my cleaners go over there, clean the apartment for him, at least clean the bathroom or get anything up. If he would have let me know about any kind of pests or anything like that in the apartment, I would have had Orkin over there generally the same day.
But by that time, May says he was too exhausted to deal with the management company. At that point, RCS offered to let May and Hart out of their lease. In the end, the company agreed to prorate the $585 monthly rent to compensate May and Hart for the days they could not use their apartment. May says he would have liked to move out altogether, but he was recently laid off from a job as a waiter. He says it will be difficult for him to put down another security deposit and 1 month's rent for a new place.
Because we are lower-income people living in lower-income housing, these property managers assume that everyone in that position doesn't have the resources to be able to stand up for themselves and advocate for themselves.
I just disagree strongly with the premise.
Bloomington's Community Development Director Tom Daybriner says tenants do have recourse.
We are interested in high-quality housing and achieving compliance as quickly as possible. I understand the frustration of a tenant who has a problem landlord. We're there to work with them.
In 2015, Bloomington hired an additional housing inspector. In the past year, the city's two inspectors performed about 2,400 inspections. More than half of those inspections required re-inspections, meaning officials found some type of housing code violations.
We are not interested in supporting landlords necessarily. We of course support the good ones. They never come up as a problem. But our interest is in a supply of quality housing.
Prairie State Legal Services, a legal aid agency, has compiled a renter's handbook. It covers such topics as getting repairs done, dispute and complaint procedures, what to do if a tenant receives an eviction notice, or if a landlord withholds a security deposit. Emily Petrie is an attorney at Prairie State. She says most landlords know their advantages under the law, but many tenants are unaware of their rights or even what's written into their leases.
They are not aware of what their legal rights and options are under their lease. Some tenants have not read their lease or understand fully the agreement they're entering into when they sign their lease.
May, who had the sewage problem, says he learned too late of his rights.
You know, there are tenant laws and things, and, you know, basically a bill of rights for tenants that a lot of people aren't familiar with. They're ignorant to the fact that, you know, there are things that can be done about it.
He says he'll be more informed in the future. I'm Judy Valente.
And I'm Mike McCurdy. Still to come in GLT's rebroadcast of the investigative series Landlord v. Tenant, Judy Valente examines what happens when a tenant takes a landlord to court. It's Sound Ideas, and up next, part three of Landlord v. Tenant. The number of housing code violations Bloomington issues landlords doubled in the 2 years since the city hired a second inspector. The number of violations last year was about 4,500. Normal's code violations have remained steady at about 1,200 per year. Inspectors often give landlords months and longer to fix problems, and this raises questions whether enforcement is adequate for chronic violators. In part three of Landlord v. Tenant, GLT's Judy Valente spends time with inspectors who say their goal is not punishment, but compliance.
On a sunny afternoon, Bloomington housing inspector Gail Price walks up a driveway to a wood-framed home on Southwestern Avenue.
So I am done with my re-inspection, and for the most part, everything is done. There were a couple of small items.
She carries a clipboard with a long list of items she usually checks during rental property inspections, from the working conditions of the plumbing and electrical wiring to the overall structure of the unit, the amount of trash in outdoor bins, and even the amount of foliage.
I don't expect non-compliance. I expect compliance. And, you know, if I have to go back a few more times, to be fair, and if some things don't get done according to my schedule, as long as it's not hurting anybody, I'm more than happy to give people a few extensions to get something done. But at the end of the day, absolutely, we expect compliance.
Price is one of two Bloomington housing inspectors. Until 2014, the city had only one inspector to ensure that more than 12,000 rental units were up to code. With the addition of a second inspector, the number of housing checks more than doubled last year to 894 from 390 in 2013. The number of housing code violations the city has issued also doubled from about 2,200 2 years ago to nearly 4,500 last year. Price says the city focuses mainly on units that have a history of disrepair.
So I speak with the owners and I look at the list of items for repair and I get their input. You know, we kind of work together based on, you know, any factors that might affect a schedule. But we work together and get a compliance date that's reasonable for them and for the city. And when that date comes, we have another reinspection. So we check everything. We don't just make a list and trust they get fixed, we go back.
Inspectors like Price have to strike a balance. They have to hold landlords accountable to keep up rental property, and they need to maintain a stock of affordable housing in a city where low-income rental units are in short supply. Tom Daybriner heads Bloomington's Community Development Office, which oversees housing inspections.
The rental program would not be in place if it wasn't for the city's interest in protecting those who find it hardest to battle the difficult landlords. And in fact, the lowest income tenants, I think, are the ones who are the people we're really trying to help.
Daybriner says the city's main interest is getting landlords to comply with the housing code rather than penalizing them. Compliance rather than punishment is the goal in Normal as well. Greg Trummel oversees Normal's housing inspections program.
The town's philosophy, we're not interested in hauling people to court. Now, there's a place for it, but ordinarily our preference is to try and sort things out between the landlord and the tenant and our program. And historically, I would say we've had pretty good luck.
Landlords receive certain courtesies from both cities. Bloomington and Normal inspectors notify landlords before an inspection takes place.
We provide written notice, you know, so this is not a surprise inspection. We provide ample notice, and then we accompany somebody from that ownership, whether it's a property manager or the owner themselves. We never do an inspection on our own. We're always with somebody who's a representative of that property.
Trummel says on inspection days, landlords sometimes send maintenance workers with toolboxes to a property so they can make repairs on the spot to avoid receiving a citation. Price, who inspects rental housing in Bloomington, says inspectors will work with landlords to an extent.
Every property has its own dynamic. However, we don't let things drag on for a year. That's not reasonable. Some things go on a little longer, maybe because the work can only be done seasonally.
But there are times when violations do continue, and landlords receive multiple opportunities to fix problems. Take the case of a unit at 501 West Market Street owned by Cynthia Shepherd. Shepherd has 50 rental properties in Bloomington. The city has cited her dozens of times in just the past year for code violations. In March of last year, an inspector determined a unit within the Market Street property was, quote, damaged, decayed, and dilapidated structurally, with partial or complete collapse possible. The inspector described the unit as dangerous to the health, life, and safety of the public. The city scheduled a reinspection of the property in November and found Shepherd had not fixed the problems. 4 months passed. Then, last February, the city issued a petition of contempt against Shepherd. She faced a fine of $950. But on the day the case was to go to trial in circuit court, the city dismissed the contempt petition. Attorney Greg Murdoch represented Bloomington.
This case really arose out of the vacant unit, and its roof was deteriorating. And then there were some interior issues as well with the property.
Murdock said the city decided to drop its case against Shepherd because she had repaired the most immediate threat to public safety, a sunken roof. She had also received estimates from contractors to repair flooring, framing, and drywall in the unit. The cost of the repairs would total about $17,000.
I felt like she was making a good faith effort to keep renovating this place to bring it up to code.
As a result, the city suspended her $950 fine.
What we'd rather have happen is have that $950 fine, if she has the money, be put in towards the $17,000 bill. So typically what we do is we look to get everything abated first and then enforce our fine.
Most cases involving housing code violations don't make it to circuit court. Bloomington and Normal both rely on administrative courts. The Shepherd case, for instance, went back to the administrative court. Angela Fiennes Jimenez is the attorney who handles most of the administrative filings for Bloomington. Fiennes Jimenez says her goal is abatement, getting landlords to fix the problem.
I'm seeing these people either every 2 weeks or every week to make sure that the abatement's getting done, not only for their own lives, but for the lives of the community around them.
Some of the same types of violations keep cropping up.
We've had bed bugs. We have had mold, actually, inside refrigerators and outside of kitchens where they haven't had appropriate air and there are older units.
A few years ago, bed bugs were such a common problem that tenants who attended administrative hearings in the Bloomington City Council chambers occasionally, unwittingly, carried the bugs on their clothing. After the council chambers had to be fumigated, the city decided to no longer hold bed bug cases in council chambers. They are now held at the Bloomington Police Headquarters. Fiennes Jimenez says bedbug cases have declined in recent years. Roaches and rodents are still problems. She recalls one landlord's property.
That particular individual, it was a rental of a single-family home, and he had so many rats that the inspector could see the rats running across the windows.
City inspectors dubbed it the Ratatouille House. The city eventually got the rats out. Gail Price, the Bloomington housing inspector, says there are several other cases that end in compliance.
I had a tenant thank me profusely. She said she'd been living in that apartment for years and never not had roaches. She said the owner would spray periodically, you know, just whatever you can buy on your own, and do a treatment to keep her happy. But until we came in and we saw it through, that was great. That's a quality of life that, you know, that makes the job so worth it.
She and other housing officials, like Community Development Director Dave Briner, acknowledge the current system is not perfect. But they say it provides enough checks and balances that tenants living in dire conditions can get help.
The legal process is our best friend. Sometimes it operates slowly, but it truly is our best friend in the long run. The judges start to recognize who are frequent flyers here, who are the problem landlords.
Dave Briner says his hope is that with consistent oversight, the landlords who have chronic violations will either do a better job with their properties or else get so annoyed they'll take their business elsewhere. I'm Judy Valente.
You're listening to a special edition of Sound Ideas and GLT's Landlord v. Tenant investigative series. Monday, we continue the conversation about quality, affordable housing with Vasu Penamaraju of the McLean County Regional Planning Commission, the Bloomington Housing Authority's Jeremy Hayes, and Laura Furlong, who helped with a League of Women Voters study on housing needs. Judy Valente has the interview Monday on Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Up next, part four of our series. A mother of six wanted to escape dangerous living conditions in Chicago when she moved to Bloomington. She now faces eviction here for withholding rent from a landlord she says failed to make critical repairs and address an insect infestation. In this part of our investigative series, Landlord v. Tenant, GLT's Judy Valente explores difficulties tenants face in taking landlords to court and talks with a landlord who says the public does not understand pressures rental property owners face.
The first thing you notice about the rental home at 705 South Center Street is that the front door doesn't lock. The posts holding up the porch shake when you touch them. Inside the front hall, there's mold from floor to ceiling on one wall, and large pieces of the wall are missing due to apparent water damage. Moesha Tyner lives in this Bloomington rental with her six children. She takes me up a narrow staircase leading from the front door to her second floor unit.
Okay, so we'll walk upstairs now. Some narrow, pretty steep steps here, which are not lit.
The stairs are wet.
The stairwell is dark. The hall light switch doesn't work. Inside the apartment, she shows me her bathroom. When we step on the floor, it sinks.
This is my bathroom where the most problem come in at, that as you can see around here, it's not safe or anything. As right here, you can see where it's caving in.
You're stepping on it and it's moving.
Yes, it's moving. I think it's very unsafe because I think one day, if the kids continue to take baths and showers up in here, it's going to cave in.
Then there are the bugs. Flies and mosquitoes come in.
Yes, very, very badly.
Several windows don't have screens. The glass is missing from windows in the basement, on the second floor in her children's playroom, and in the attic. Tyner pulls out a cell phone and displays photographs of her young daughter with insect bites.
This is one of my daughter's arm from her being bite from a bug. This is the side of her face being bite from a bug. These are the roaches when I sprayed.
Another photo shows the extent of the roach infestation despite Tyner's attempts to spray the unit daily with insect repellent.
So you have about a few dozen dead roaches that you swept up after you sprayed.
Yes, they are. As you can see.
I see that you try to keep your kitchen as clean as possible.
Everything, all your food protected, because it's roaches, as you can see.
Tyner says the roaches were there when she moved in, but she had little choice but to take the 3-bedroom apartment when she arrived in Bloomington from Chicago about 2 years ago. It was big enough for her large family, and at $700 a month, it was something she could afford, barely, on her $9-an-hour job at Burger King. Plus, she was happy to leave her previous neighborhood in Chicago.
I came from Chicago due to the fact we had a fire. A man was on our porch dead. I came to Bloomington to change our life, and that's what I thought.
Tyner says she tried numerous times to contact her landlord, Cynthia Shepherd, asking her to make repairs and have the unit professionally fumigated.
Yes, I complained to my landlord several times. I was told not to contact her by phone, or she would be taking me to court to leave the premises.
Shepherd does business as Shackman Rentals and owns 50 buildings in Bloomington. Her units have been cited so many times for housing code violations, city officials say they've stopped counting. She is a regular in the administrative housing court, appearing on multiple cases in a single day.
Hello there. Are you Cynthia Shepherd? Okay, I'm Judy Valente. I just wanted to talk to you for a little bit about some of your properties.
I visited Shepherd in her office on Main Street. Tenants stream in and out to pay rent, usually in cash. Shepherd says she considers herself a champion of the poor.
My specialty is single mothers. And a lot of these women are very young, and a lot of them have multiple children, even though they're under 25. And the men are in prison. The men are not coming up with any money for them. And so they do run into problems, and they have to rely on their family and friends and co-workers to help them, and they're usually in the same boat.
Shepherd says the public generally doesn't understand the difficulties landlords face or the costs involved in keeping up properties. She says she spends about $10,000 a month to pay maintenance workers. After she retired as a paralegal with the Illinois Supreme Court, she says she had to take a job as a supermarket cashier to help support herself and pay her business expenses.
There's some tenants, usually the ones that I evict, you know, are going to be the ones that think I'm a slumlord, I guess. But I don't quite understand that because I have never had any money for myself. That's why I had to work a full-time and a part-time job. And that money, all my retirement money, goes into Shackman, into my rental properties, which is $10,000 a month.
Shepherd blames her tenants for the disrepair in their units. She says she has sent maintenance workers to address some of Tyner's complaints.
And what my maintenance guy noticed when he was up there to do some work, first of all, there were so many children running back and forth, he was actually afraid to leave tools there. And he thought if he turned around quickly, he would hurt somebody because they weren't always well behaved. So we pulled off.
Shepherd estimates she files 2 to 3 eviction notices against tenants each month. She says tenants fall behind in their rent payments because of what she views as the poor life choices they make.
A lack of work ethic. People don't feel like they have to work 40 hours a week. I usually work 90, and this was before I retired. But it seems like I still work 90 now. But I just think I put my work ethic first. I didn't have any children. And it seems like now people put children, have as many children as they possibly can, without being able to afford them. And I see that being a major problem, especially with single women.
But it's not that simple. For many people, like Moesha Tyner, survival is a daily struggle. When she lost her job at Burger King, she got another job as a cashier at Walmart. That job also paid $9 an hour with no benefits. She receives $800 a month in food stamps. Her estranged husband pays the gas and electric bill, but he too works a minimum wage job at a local bar restaurant. Tyner received an eviction notice from Shepherd after Tyner began withholding rent, hoping that it would force her landlord to make repairs and bring in professional fumigators.
All I can do if a tenant has stopped working with me, I have to proceed. If they work with me, you know, I think we can get through all of these things that need to be repaired.
Tyner's downstairs neighbor at the Center Street property has also begun withholding rent. Delilah Grant keeps a bucket in her living room to catch water leaking through her ceiling from Tyner's bathroom upstairs. Grant also complains about bugs.
We always pay rent on time, and then all of a sudden when we start seeing, you know, stuff that really need to be fixed or exterminated, you know, she would just push us to the side, but she would still call for her rent.
Grant saved some messages from Shepherd on her cell phone.
Delilah, this is Cindy Shepherd. I know you've been served with a 5-day notice. You haven't paid the amount that you owe, so I'm proceeding with the eviction. I thought you could be decent and give me a call or bring in some money to stop the eviction.
Grant has 3 children and works as a certified nursing assistant. She is now looking for someplace else to live.
I don't have $35 or $25 every time I go and try to put in an application for apartment, and then they want 2 or 3 months security and first months. How am I gonna come up with all that with on 3 kids? All you can do is just, yeah, pray and do day by day. I mean, I still have a roof, but I don't know how long I'm gonna have a roof.
Lawyers who represent tenants say withholding rent is one of the worst strategies tenants can use. Under the Illinois Landlord-Tenant Code, tenants have to pay rent on time unless they can prove their unit is uninhabitable. Emily Petrie is an attorney with Prairie Legal Services, which helps low-income clients.
Under Illinois law, having issues with your landlord not making repairs and not fixing problems is not a complete defense to an eviction case. There's probably an argument to be made, given all of the issues, and the judge would have to look at the specific issues, that rent should be a lot less. But it's really hard to argue that rent should be wiped out, that it should be $0, because the tenant was still staying there, was still able to have some use of their apartment.
Petrie says a better strategy is for the tenant to pay some rent or else place the whole month's rent in escrow with Prairie Legal Services or other legal counsel. That underscores another difficulty for low-income tenants. Most cannot afford representation. Prairie Legal Services says it doesn't have the funds or staff to take on landlord-tenant cases that don't have a strong legal defense.
When I went to court, it was a learning experience. I had to find a way to be my own advocate, but I knew that I had the heart to represent myself in a positive way.
One Bloomington tenant who went to court is Anthony Middleton, a part-time construction worker. He sued AB Rentals in Bloomington after a fire swept through its property at 812 West Washington Street last February. Middleton's unit, unlike the others, received only smoke damage. After the fire, AB changed the locks in all of the rental units. Middleton says he called the property manager a number of times seeking to get into his unit to collect his belongings. He was concerned about his computers and other electronic equipment. before the landlord responded, his unit was burglarized.
The fire, it was heartbreaking. But the burglary after the fire, it took some time for me to function and get back to the normal things of life.
In court, AB Rentals was represented by counsel and also brought a witness to buttress its case. At times during the proceedings, Middleton appeared so frustrated he would place his head in his hands.
You know, I kind of like lost it a little bit, and I thought I was going to lose. But something in my heart kept saying, speak the truth, speak the truth. And everything to sort itself out. God was always with me.
Middleton sought $4,000 from AB as replacement value for the items that were stolen. In court, AB's representative, Lina Bunnell, maintained the company owed Middleton nothing and could not be held liable for the burglary. Judge David Butler ruled in Middleton's favor. He said AB was not responsible for replacement value of the stolen items, but still had to pay Middleton $1,700 to compensate for his loss.
I was telling the truth, so thank God that we have a justice system where the judge made the decision for me.
Lawyers who represent tenants say Middleton's success is an exception. Moesha Tyner, the resident at the Center Street apartment, represented herself in the eviction case brought by her landlord, Cynthia Shepherd. At a hearing in August, Tyner agreed to move out with her children within 30 days in exchange for not having to pay 3 months back rent and other expenses her landlord claimed she was owed. The judge never heard Tyner's complaints about her living conditions because Tyner agreed to settle before the case went to trial.
If it beats for me having to pay $3,000 and not having a eviction on my background, I will take that.
Tyner is now seeking a new place to live. She has contacted some of the local homeless shelters, but she says they are either full or can't accept her with her 6 children.
It's hard, but I've been looking, and it's like I don't want to get another landlord that's going I have to go through this.
A few weeks ago, Shepherd did send some workmen over to Tyner's unit to patch up some of the walls and ceiling and paint the outside of the house. Shepherd says she's getting Tyner's old unit ready for new renters. I'm Judy Valente.
Most landlord-tenant disputes in the county are settled outside of court. Those that do come to court usually go before McLean County Associate Judge David Butler. Butler is the judge who signed the eviction order for Moesha Tyner to vacate her unit on Center Street after Tyner reached an agreement with her landlord to move out. Butler tells GLT's Judy Valente that in landlord-tenant cases, it's often difficult to balance human concerns with the mandate of the law.
The scenario you describe where you put a single parent out who has one or 6 kids is always hard. And I've had numerous cases like that where it's very hard to enter an order of possession that tells somebody you got 7 days to move everything you own out of this apartment or this house and without knowing where to put it. One of the things that I try to do to lessen that is on the day we set the trial is typically several weeks after we set it, and I remind the tenant at that time that if the court finds that the landlord is entitled to have possession back, they won't have a month to move. It's typically 7 days. We try to be consistent so that they're not caught by surprise on the day of the trial when they're ordered to move out in 7 days. The judge can't show compassion to one party at the expense of someone else.
Judge Butler, I've sat in your courtroom a few times, and I noticed that a number of the tenants can't afford to have attorneys if they're in a dispute with their landlord. They try to represent themselves. They have very little idea of what to do in a court setting. Does that not put the tenant at a distinct disadvantage in any type of dispute, even if the tenant has a good cause?
Certainly it does. And that's true. It's certainly true if the landlord has an attorney, but it's also true if the landlord is also representing themselves because the landlords are experienced at this. They have probably gotten some training from a lawyer. They've paid a lawyer for advice on how to proceed with eviction cases, and they're more experienced at it because I see some of the same professional landlords in court every few weeks. So they've gone through this enough times that they know the law better and the system better. So, yeah, a tenant who does not have a lawyer is at a distinct disadvantage in these proceedings.
Is there something you do differently when people come in without attorneys, particularly the tenants who are often very ill-equipped in a court setting?
Well, under the Supreme Court rules, we can relax the rules of evidence a little bit, but both sides have to present evidence that is admissible, and you can't penalize the party who has a lawyer, you know, by not following the rules of evidence. And oftentimes it's a matter of not knowing what's admissible and what's not. But also, most tenants don't know the procedural requirements that the landlord must go through in order to be entitled to an eviction. And oftentimes the landlord will make mistakes in serving the 5-day notice, and the tenant doesn't recognize that. And the court is in a position where the judge really should not become an advocate for one side or the other, raise issues that one party has not raised. So it's difficult. Sometimes you're sitting here watching the evidence and you're thinking, if this party had a lawyer, they could resist this eviction proceeding, but it's not appropriate for the court then to put on an advocate's hat and start helping one side to prevail in the legal dispute over the other side.
In general, do you think tenants understand what their rights are? There is such a thing as an Illinois Tenants' Bill of Rights.
No, I don't think the majority of tenants know their rights. They can get some, you know, it varies from county to county, but they can get some legal advice or legal aid offices that sometimes will appear in court and give advice without entering their appearance as their legal counsel, and that helps.
McLean County Associate Judge David Butler speaking with GLT's Judy Valente. Representatives of Prairie Legal Services are available on Thursday mornings on the third floor of the McLean County Courthouse to offer advice to tenants who can't afford lawyers. On certain Friday mornings, tenants and landlords who are representing themselves in disputes can also seek free mediation from trained volunteers at the courthouse. You've been listening to an encore edition of GLT's investigative series, Landlord v. Tenant. Thanks to GLT's Judy Valente for her reporting. Ryan Denham managed online content for the series, and Landlord v. Tenant was edited by Charlie Schlenker. Find the entire series at WGLT.org, as well as podcasts and stories from other Sound Ideas episodes. And Monday, listen as GLT's Judy Valente continues the conversation about affordable housing with officials from the McLean County Regional Planning Commission and the Bloomington Housing Authority, as well as a community activist about possible solutions to the affordable housing crisis. That's Monday during Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. This is WGLT Normal, Bloomington Normal's public media.